episode of Book Club Appetizer. I'm your book-obsessed host, Abby, and I'm pleased to announce that Emma Schaefer, community manager of Blogging for Books and my guest host from last episode, will be Book Club Appetizer's new co-host. Welcome to the team, Emma.
Thanks, Abby. Hi, guys. I'm Emma, super excited to be joining this podcast, and I hope to be able to recommend lots of books to lots of readers.
And speaking of which, isn't that something you do every Thursday on Twitter?
Yes, it is. I help run an awesome Twitter chat under the hashtag AskALibrarian, where we have hundreds of librarians from around the country logging on every Thursday from noon to 1 p.m. Eastern time to give book recommendations.
Yes, I personally really enjoy this. I think librarians are like wizards, aren't they?
They're incredible.
Like, if I type in that I liked a book, they have four or five new suggestions that I need to read, and most of them I've never even heard of. So if you're on Twitter, check out hashtag AskALibrarian every Thursday at noon Eastern.
Okay, so you know how Book Club Appetizer works. Abby and I are bringing you our snackable podcast that's perfect for kicking off book club meetings or enhancing your solo reading adventures.
Yep, we're all about making book club easy. No more posting on Facebook in a panic to see what books your friends have read, then Googling them to see if they're legit. We pick titles that are sure to foster discussion and debate amongst your most literary friends, and then we bring the author into the studio for an exclusive interview.
And since after we pick the book, our minds immediately go to what we want to eat and drink while we discuss it with our friends, we pair each book with an appropriate appetizer and cocktail recipe served up by our friends at Tastebook.
The book we read this month sees a Chinese-American family, once owners of a flourishing beauty business, lose everything in the recession, and they're forced to road trip across America in order to start a new life.
The appetizer we chose this month is Chinese lollipop wings, fried chicken drumettes that are seasoned with lots of ginger, garlic, sriracha, and soy. These are seriously addictive, people. So definitely make extra.
Oh, they sound so good.
Yeah. And also, we're sorry in advance for getting greasy fingerprints on the pages of your book and all of your friends' books.
Yes. And as a nod to this family's fall from riches to rags, we're mixing up the Billionaire's Cocktail, a bourbon-based drink that's offset by grenadine and absinthe bitters.
Whoa.
So, yeah. Even if you're not a billionaire, you can still drink like one. So look for those recipes on readitforward.com/podcast.
Okay, before we introduce this month's read, recap the plot, and invite the author into the studio, we have to warn you, like we always do, this podcast contains plot spoilers.
This month, we read The Wangs Versus the World by Jade Chang, which is a rollicking debut novel that looks at what it means to be a part of a family and what it means to be American. The story opens with our patriarch, Charles Wang, who has lost his entire business after he wasn't able to keep it afloat during the recession. Charles, who emigrated from Taiwan to the States, lured by the promise of the American dream, starts a cosmetics empire, which is incredibly profitable, affording the Wang family a luxurious life, until it isn't. Charles buys into the promise of the American dream and then feels scorned by it.
Yeah, suddenly their mansion in Bel Air is being foreclosed upon, all their possessions are seized, and Charles and his second wife, Barbara, spelled like Streisand, are suddenly homeless with no place to go. He has plans to return to the old world to reclaim a large plot of ancestral land that he believes he can access thanks to a loophole in an ancient Chinese law. But we're not really sure if that's just what Charles is telling himself so that he can save face with his family.
Oh, yes, we can't forget about the rest of the family. With no place to live in California, Charles realizes that the only property under the Wang's name is his daughter Sina's house in upstate New York. Sina is 28 and is a former art world darling who's in hiding from the shame of a breakup and a bad last show up in a bungalow in the Catskills.
So Charles decides the family must head across the entire country to Sina's house. Along the way, he picks up Gracie, a spoiled 15-year-old burgeoning style blogger who's been away at boarding school and thus shielded from the family's financial difficulties. Now, Charles hasn't been able to pay her tuition recently, so the school is all too happy to let her leave in the middle of the semester.
Whoops. And when the trio reaches Arizona, they pick up Andrew, the middle sibling, who is away at college, aspiring to be a stand-up comedian. His black SUV is repossessed, much to his shock, and he gets folded into the car with the rest of the family. So now the four of them are on the road, and everyone is mad at Charles for ending the rich and famous lifestyles they'd grown accustomed to. Emma, have you ever been on a long car ride with someone you're mad at?
Oh, it's not good. Not good at all.
And suffice it to say, in this book, the trip does not go smoothly.
But along the way, they each gain insight into what the others are dealing with. Charles, with his obsession with the American dream and doing right by his family by getting back on his feet again, even if it's in China. What I loved most about this book is its examination of first and second generation families in the U.S. Where is a person's home, really? When you assimilate to the culture of your new home, are you somehow forgetting a piece of yourself?
Oh, that's such a good question. And I love that the author, Jade Chang, doesn't rely on stereotypes for any of her characters. I mean, these are not tiger moms. They're not quiet violin players. These characters are well-rounded and they feel really real. And they're incredibly flawed. So at times during the road trip, I both hated and loved every one of them. And also, this novel is just such a witty takedown of the American dream. And it rolls the immigrant story in with the road trip narrative into this hysterical comedic novel.
And I love that the plot is so propulsive, even though the family gets taken on some pretty significant detours along the way. One thing I really liked was the perfect family dynamics. Again, definitely not relying on stereotypes of oldest, middle, or youngest children, but making them really feel wholly real. The dialogue was one of my favorite parts of this book. I miss these characters like they're my actual friends.
Yes. And I love Jade's skewering of American culture in the book, too, especially as seen through both Charles's eyes, you know, he's the first generation, and his kids, who are second gen. So things like style blogging, the financial crisis, Art Basel, dating, the beauty industry. I mean, these things all take equal turns under Jade Chang's witty microscope.
Well, we could discuss the novel of American immigrants, family unity, parental debt, and financial ruin all day. But we have some questions that only the author can answer. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with the Wangs vs. the World author Jade Chang in the studio after this brief message. This episode of Book Club Appetizer is brought to you by Season of Stories from our friends at Penguin Random House. It's no secret that the inbox can be a pretty hectic, miserable place. The Season of Stories aims to change that by delivering great stories from award-winning authors directly to your inbox. And did we mention that it's free? Sign up at theseasonofstories.com today before the season ends. That's theseasonofstories.com.
And now we welcome Jade Chang, author of The Wangs vs. the World, into the studio. Where and when did the Wangs first come to you, Jade?
So I was... there are a lot of answers to that question.
Yeah.
But in the late summer of 2008, which is when this book is set, I was working at this luxury magazine called Angelino. And as part of my job at that magazine, I went to ridiculous parties. And one of the ridiculous parties that I went to was actually, it was a party for the Trump Tower Dubai, which is, you know, which was a building that was never built. The party was just to kind of celebrate its idea. So, you know, very sort of like the last moment before the crash, obviously.
Right.
And it was, the party was nuts. You know, Christina Aguilera sang, Wolfgang Puck was there actually like preparing and serving appetizers that were sprinkled with gold dust, like actual gold dust. Yeah, yeah. The whole thing was so over the top that I remember being in the valet line at the end of the party, you know, waiting for my, like, very old Mitsubishi sedan to pull up in the midst of all
these
the
town
fancy
cars. And limos.
Exactly. But I remember, and then they gave every single party guest an iPod Touch as a favor. Yeah, that had a video of the construction of this tower that was not actually being constructed. You know, it was just like a CGI video of it. I remember standing there and talking to a friend and just saying, dude, this is the end. Like, this is this has to be the beginning of the end. Yeah. And then it was pretty much like the week after that, things just started exploding. And, you know, I think just that moment of total excess and then everything that happened afterwards, I just really, it was such a moment of change and craziness and it just felt like a really exciting time in which to set a book.
Yeah, totally. Like the high highs and then followed by the immediate low lows, which this family goes through.
Mm-hmm.
And so the three siblings in this family are so richly drawn, and I feel like forever, everyone who has a sibling, like you have a sister, right?
I do.
I have a brother, a younger brother.
Okay.
And I felt like these three siblings were so unique, and as the story grows, you learn more about them and you become just so invested. They're so relatable. Like, how were their characters shaped in your mind? Was Grace like immediately the young social media blogger? Was Sana the artist? Or did these things come to you sort of like you know a person piece by piece?
I think the broad outlines of who they were kind of came to me pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It was also, you know, I wanted to talk about the kind of like Gen X millennial like crunch, I guess.
Totally.
And so Sina in 2008, she's 28 years old, I believe.
Yep.
And Grace is 10 years younger than her. And I wanted these two siblings who were kind of in different generations, and then I kind of wanted them to have jobs or interests that sort of were somewhat representative of their generations, but that were also things that I was very interested in. You know? So Sina is a conceptual artist. She's also currently in retreat because she's been disgraced. But yeah, so she's a conceptual artist. Andrew is an aspiring stand-up comic and a college student. And Grace is a style blogger. And so those things definitely, I knew I wanted to be in those worlds. I knew I wanted to be in art and fashion and comedy.
Yeah.
But in terms of their emotional makeup, I'd say, like, the broad strokes of that I kind of had going in just at the very start. But definitely, like, things that, like, getting to know what really had affected them, made them who they were.
Totally.
I think those were things that kind of got dug up as I wrote.
Yeah. And their relationships to each other. Like, Grace is such a little sister.
Yeah.
And Andrew's so in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thought a lot about, I found birth order theory so interesting.
Yeah.
And I always wanted an older brother.
Oh, interesting.
Felt like it would be so nice to have an older brother.
Totally.
And, I just always felt like my, like, the little sister, the littlest kid is always, like, afraid, it doesn't want to get left out. Like, it's always like, hey, why are you guys doing things without me?
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But she's so, like, everyone's felt that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the middle kid is always, like, bringing people together and
totally
and of course it doesn't work this way in every family, but I feel like I've seen it enough in families that
exactly, and it wasn't cookie cutter, but there's elements of Andrew where, like, he does nurture Grace and he couldn't possibly think of her growing up at all. Why or how do road trips put a microscope on relationships? Like, this family is in the car for days and a lot happens in that car or right outside of it. And I feel like being enclosed in this small space makes things get on edge very quickly.
Yeah, totally.
Was that a device you used?
I don't know that I thought about it consciously in that way, but I think, okay, like, you know how, for example, in college with your roommate, when you guys are just, you know, spend a lot of time just kind of sitting around the dorm room, like, waiting for stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what I did, but I feel
dinner,
like
mostly.
I waited a lot. And you guys are just, like, in this, you're just, like, always in this enclosed space, but it means that you kind of end up, like, laughing a lot about dumb stuff, and then you end up like telling each other a lot of stuff that you maybe hadn't intended to share, and I feel like in some ways a road trip kind of works in a similar way. You know, you're in this enclosed space, and you all have to agree on like times to eat and times to pee, and I feel like it not only can it not help but bring you closer, but it also, I think there's room for that kind of, like, unexpected hilarity that only comes from, like, extremes, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Being somewhere where you ordinarily would never be with people who, like, these guys are supposed to be away at school.
Right.
And not at a roadside rest in Nashville.
Yeah. And, you know, Grace is like, who takes a road trip with her parents? I mean, come on.
Totally.
You know.
Yeah. So the dad, Charles Wang, feels in some way cheated by America. Like, on one hand, he achieved the American dream, and then he lost it. What are you saying sort of about how this country treats its immigrant population who come here believing that if they work hard, they will achieve success?
Well, I feel like I truly don't think of this book as like a statement in one way or another.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm trying to make statements as much as there are a lot of questions that are very interesting to me that I kind of wanted to explore. You know, and I think in terms of the American dream, what Charles says in the book and what he would say to you right now is that it's not just the American dream, you know?
Yeah.
Who doesn't want their, like, a better life for their children? Who doesn't want to make some money and you know, have a fun life for themselves?
Yeah.
Like, everybody in every country wants that.
Isn't that the point?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, what else are we going to do with our lives?
Isn't that what we're doing here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, would you do a little reading for us?
Oh, sure.
I have a book.
Okay. This is from the second chapter. Sina Wang smoothed out the tabloid-sized Catskills Chronicler and paged past the op-ed column, skipping the list of new high school seniors, glancing over the photos of the mayor's Labor Day barbecue and the pet of the week, in search of the horoscopes. Usually, she read the New York Times, made herself read it, a reminder of the life that she could be, maybe should be, living. But that paper would never carry anything as frivolous and as useful as horoscopes. There they were, squeezed onto the recipe page under a photo of cream corn succotash with crisp prosciutto. Libra, you resonate with things and people you love. The more you let yourself love, the better you feel. The better you feel, the healthier you become. Love is a healer, and so are you. It was exactly what she'd always feared was true. From the time Sina was very young, she worried that she would always be the lover and never the loved. And then she grew up and it got more complicated. Now, she thought that she would always be the salve to some artist's eternally wounded soul, an unwilling goddess to be worshipped and adored, but never, ever worried over or taken care of. No one thinks to make the goddess a cup of tea. They just ply her with useless perfumed oils and impotent carved fetishes. Giant canvases that glorified her naked breasts and half-smile, songs rhyming Sina and Juana, unfinished novels about an unknowable girl of dreams. None of that, and she'd had all of it, was as romantic as a boyfriend who would notice that the light bulb in her hallway had blown out and change it without even bothering to mention the favor. Sometimes, when you're in love with an artist, it can be hard to see that it's not about you at all. You get lost in the attention, the deep, soulful gazes, and the probing regard. And then, gradually, you come to realize that you're not so much a woman as you are a statue on a pedestal that he chiseled and posed, a foreshortened figure that he sees only through a single squinted eye. When you're in love with an artist, you're no longer you exactly, but a loving and generous everywoman who will weave your life into a crafty plinth for his work. And it doesn't even matter if you're an artist too. You could have a whole room, a small one, but a whole room nonetheless, at the Whitney Biennial. Your gallery in Berlin could be paranoid enough about your potential defection to a rival that you'd have to fake an eccentric demand for weekly shipments of special order octopus-shaped Haribo gummies just so they'd stop asking you what they could do to make you happy. Your dealer in New York could be fending off a waiting list filled with scores of discerning millionaires, and you could be a permanent fixture on both the Art Forum party pages and NewYorkSocialDiary.com, but your beautiful boyfriend, with his perpetually dirty fingernails, could still be so obsessed with the politics of his own creation that he would take all of that in with an absent-minded kiss and ask you again, and then a 15th time if you heard the difference between nearly identical sound loops on the track accompanying his latest installation. And then he could leave you. After making you his art object, making your love for him his symbol and subject, after presenting you with a heavy, hand-hammered gold band set on the inside with an uncut black diamond so that only the lump of it, sheathed in gold, could be seen when you wore it, a ring that got its own mini profile in Vogue. After all that, he could still make your life into a Page Six blind item by leaving you for a jewelry-designing mattress heiress named Sabrina with unattractive knees and a maddening sheaf of corn silk hair. And yes, yes, it could be the same jewelry-designing mattress heiress who made your gorgeous, heartbreaking, stupid human rights disaster of a ring. None of it surprised Zina anymore. She was 28, and she had turned unshockable. So when the phone rang and she picked it up and found her father in tears, her heart stayed put. "It is over," choked her father, coughing to cover the angry wobble in his voice. "What's over?" she asked. "Our whole life." Zina looked around the room. "My life was already over," she thought to herself. She was washed up, tossed out, ruined and ridiculed and exiled from the magic island of Manhattan. What could be more over than that? "Baba, don't be so dramatic. What's going on?" "We are leaving." "What do you mean?" "It is over. I lost it. Jiejie, I lost it." "What?" asked Zina, her heart now quickening. "What did you lose? Tell me. You have to tell me. You can't just not talk about it, like everything." Zina's father's words came out in a rush, the breaking of a giant dam. "All. Baba lost it all. Wanle. You understand what that means? We're at the end." "The stores. You just mean the stores, right? That's what you lost? We talked about that already." Was he starting to forget things? He was too young for Alzheimer's. "Everything. Everything? Everything. Now we come to New York." Her father's English sounded more broken than usual. Not that he'd ever bothered to perfect it in the first place. The rules of grammar were beneath him, bylaws for a silly club that he had no intention of joining. Why should he spend any energy on English, he'd explained once, when soon the whole world would be speaking Chinese? And now, though, he sounded like a sweet and sour chicken delivery boy who'd missed out on America and instead taken up residency in a new country called Chinatown. "What do you mean you're coming to New York?" "We have no home, Jiejie. We come live with you now." "The house? But why was that tied up with everything else? I don't understand. How could there be nothing left? What about your savings? What about all your other clients?" There was a long, humid silence. Finally, he spoke again. "Daddy, make a mistake. I think that if I can just hold on for long enough, that everything is okay again. So I just throw it all in, like throwing in a hole." "Oh, Daddy, I'm sorry." "No point in sorry now." Okay, what should she do? What could she do? How long it take to drive across country? Maybe 8 day, 10 day? He sounded small, wounded. Zina looked around her house, panic creeping in. It wasn't even a house, really. Not in any way that her father would understand or approve of. Not a Bel Air Georgian or a rehabbed modernist gem. Not even a downtown New York loft. It was a Catskills farmhouse 3 generations away from any kind of respectability, perched on the edge of a town abandoned by Lubavitchers and just beginning to be occupied by weekending gay couples and third-wave farmers carrying blue-eyed babies in batik slings.
Thanks for listening, readers. We have some reader questions on our site in addition to a link to the awesome Spotify playlist that we put together to accompany Jade's book. All songs about family and road tripping across this great country of ours.
And if you like The Wangs Versus the World and want to read more books like it, the Read It Forward team and the trusty librarians from the Ask a Librarian Twitter chat have suggested a few recommendations on readitforward.com/podcast. We're producing monthly episodes centered around fantastic books we think you should read with your book club. So when you need something new to devour, come see what we've been reading recently.
And whether you've listened to all 12 of our podcast episodes or you're a first-time listener, we'd love to hear what you think of our show. Take a minute and leave us a review on iTunes. We can handle it, we promise.
And, as always, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Read It Forward and tweet about books with us. Happy reading, and cheers!
Cheers!